What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Red Blacks Unfiltered. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a rating and a review. The more positive ratings and reviews we get, the more it helps new people find the show. And thanks to you beautiful people that have listened to this podcast so far, we at one point trended as the number one football podcast in Canada. So I just want to give you a big thank you for that. And now, without further ado, let's get to our conversation with Brendan Galanders. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Red Blacks Unfiltered. Today we are joined by Brendan Galanders. Gilly, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. What's up, guys?
Excited to have you here on the show. So the first thing that I want to talk about, so obviously when people think of Brendan Galanders, they think how you're from Ottawa, you played for the GGs, you play for the Red Blacks now. But you weren't born in Ottawa, right? You were born in Victoria, moved to Halifax, and then ended up in Ottawa?
Yeah, so exactly. I guess because I listed Orleans and Ottawa as my hometown, I guess everyone assumed that I was born in Orleans, but I was actually born in Victoria, moved to Ottawa, and then Halifax, and then back to Ottawa.
Okay. And it's because your dad worked in the Navy, right?
Yeah, my dad was in the Navy for 20 years.
Okay, cool. And then football wasn't your first sport growing up either, right?
No, I started, typical Canadian. I started playing hockey when I was 3 years old.
And then, so how long did you play both sports? Like, when did you make the commitment to just playing football?
I played hockey probably up until I was 16 years old, and I started playing football when I was probably 9 or 10, but when I was in high school, it started getting too busy. I was running indoor track in the winter, which overlapped with hockey, and football season in the fall overlapped with the beginning of hockey season as well, so it just became too much and had to drop one of them.
And why was hockey the one you dropped?
I love hockey. It's definitely a sport that I want to get back into in men's league after I'm done playing football. But there was something that drew me from football to football right away. I fell in love with the sport, and I guess I haven't looked back.
Yeah, and I know when you started football, you were 9. And your dad, when you were growing up, used to kind of iron clothes and watch the NFL, right?
Yeah, exactly. So on Sundays, old cable TV, right, we'd get the Bills games on global television. So basically every Sunday would be his day to iron after doing the laundry. And I'd sit in there watching football with him. And that was the introduction to football was the NFL. He was always a CFL fan. My dad actually played high school football growing up as well. So he has like the super old school jerseys that have the 3/4 length and cut off like halfway up the mid arm and stuff. And he still has it hanging up in his closet. So he's always been a football fan, and introduced it to me at a young age for a Canadian as well.
That's awesome. So then it was through watching football with your dad, and ultimately is why you started playing?
Yeah, exactly. I had a couple of childhood friends that were playing NCAF at the time here in Ottawa, and they were like, hey, you should come out and try it. I was playing touch tackle football at recess, elementary school and stuff like that. So it was something that I took to right away.
And then, so you played Cumberland first, and then where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school at Sir Wilfrid Laurier in Orleans.
Okay, and then from there, I'm always curious about the recruiting process when it comes to going to play U sports. So you went to Ottawa U. Was it always the plan Ottawa U? Were they the ones that have most heavily recruited you, or was there like some options for you at that time?
I mean, yeah, the recruiting really picked up. I played in the Canada Cup, the U17 Canada Cup, and won offensive MVP, tournament MVP. And we won the bronze medal that year, and a lot of the CIS and university coaches were coaching all the various provincial teams, and that's really when I started getting on the radar of a lot of guys. But U Ottawa, their offensive coordinator at the time was the offensive coordinator for the U17 team that I was playing for, so it was a natural fit. And U Ottawa also had one of the best programs in the country at the time. I'd love to tell you that it was completely 100% my decision to go there, but I took a long route to getting into university. Basically, I was an honor roll student from grade 9 to 11 and then grade 12 because I was playing varsity football when I was in grade 10. Basically, I was always friends with the grade above me. They all graduated and left and went on to play university football, and I was kind of left in high school by myself, and I didn't get done what I needed to do and didn't leave myself very many options. I was also heavily recruited by McMaster, Queens, a bunch of other schools. There were a couple opportunities to write my SATs and get a couple looks down in the US as well. But like I said, I didn't take care of my studying and academics, and realistically I didn't even get into the program at the University of Ottawa that I wanted to. They basically let me into a social science degree at first and told me that you need a so-and-so average to transfer over into human kinetics your second year, and then your first year classes will become your electives. And luckily enough, I smartened up once I got into university and was able to transfer over. But that's the gist of it. I didn't make it easy on myself, and I took the hard way. So now it's like when I talk to the kids, it's like, do as I say, not as I did. And I learned from my mistakes, and that's what I try and tell a lot of the high school guys that I coach now.
So when you were in high school, there was there ever like an exam in the last semester where you're like, I need to get like a 65 in this in order to pass to graduate? Did it come down to that or not really?
In high school, no, it was, it wasn't that. I mean, obviously, you know, grade 12 is significantly more challenging than grade 11. And I wanted to get into a science-based program at the university. So I was taking two math classes, two science classes, chem, physics, bio, calculus, advanced functions. And I mean, that's difficult to do when you're trying to concentrate on football as well. And like I said, it was a little bit in my head when you think you're the guy and you can stop going to classes and stuff like that. And I unfortunately had to learn the hard way, but luckily it all worked out in the end.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, so with Canada Cup, is that's like basically around Team Ontario?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now I think they have like Team East Ontario, Team West Ontario. They have a whole bunch more provincial involvement than when I played. We're talking way back in the day now. But yeah, when I played, it was Team Ontario, you had North Alberta, South Alberta, Manitoba, you had Quebec, Atlantic provinces. So, yeah.
And then, so was there a lot of travel associated with that back then?
It was one tournament. It was based out of, where's the Bishops? Lenoxville? That's the area the Bishops campus is on? Oh, okay. Yeah, it was at Bishops and Sherbrooke. So that's where we were at. All the teams came there and had basically three games in a week pretty much and played it that way. So it was fun.
And so was that kind of your first exposure to a lot of kids in other provinces playing?
Yeah, exactly. So we had kids like on our team from like Crestwood, basically where Brad Sinopoli went, and Peterborough. So you had some big name schools, or a couple big, really big powerhouse schools in Kingston as well. Obviously a couple of really big schools here in Ottawa, but it was the first time that I had gone up against some of the top talent in Canada. Yeah.
Are there some guys from that tournament that you can remember playing against that are now in the CFL with you?
Yeah, Hunter Stewart was actually one of my O-linemen. He plays for BC now, and he has for a couple years. So that's one, and I'm sure there's a couple others. I think there were up to about four of us from that Team Ontario that I played on alone. I just can't think of any names off the top of my head other than Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Fair, but then back to U Ottawa. What was it like playing there during your time?
I absolutely loved U Ottawa. I had a little bit of a different ride. I played for four head coaches in 5 years. When I came in, it was Denis Pichet was the head coach, and then I had JP Asselin for 2 years. I had Gary Echeverry for three quarters of a year, and then I had Coach B, who's there now, as my last year. So yeah, I had a little bit of a interesting time there, and unfortunately for some of the guys that came in a year before me and came in with me, I think that a lot of them would say that it was a mixed experience. A lot of them kind of went out on a sour note, unfortunately, But I mean, it was honestly some of the friendships that I made playing university football. They're by far my best friends now, and we will be lifelong friends. I absolutely loved the campus. As I said, my academics picked up again. I was able to transfer over into human kinetics after my second year and ended up finishing with a degree that I never even got into in the first place. So that's kind of cool. And obviously, we're ranked top 10. In the country the entire time I was there as well, and unfortunately never got it done. Made it to one Yates Cup in 2010, the year that Brad Snopley won the Het Crichton. But yeah, I mean, friendships for sure, everlasting, and the football was amazing as well. Credit to my coaching staff that I had there to get me to where I am right now.
I actually wanted to ask you about playing with current teammates back in the day. We'll start with Brad, obviously. What was it like playing with Brad? Because that would have been your freshman year and his last year.
Yeah.
What was it like playing with him when he was a quarterback still?
Brad throws the ball so hard. People don't fathom it. Like, it's hilarious. When people ask me about quarterbacks that I've played with, I still say the same thing. No one throws the ball harder than Brad. And that might just be because he has no touch on the ball, but it's true. It was to the point where I wouldn't catch balls from him pregame because my hands would be red before the game even started. He had an absolute cannon, and it was a little bit different. It was kind of like, any pass play that was called, I mean, I really didn't even have to run a check down because I just assumed that Brad was going to run the ball 50 yards instead of, checking the ball down. So it was fun. Got to block for him downfield a lot, but, he was a playmaker in 2010 when he won, the Het Crichton. He by far and away was the best player in all of Canada, and he was exciting to watch and play with. And, he's always been fun. He's always been fun.
Yeah. What about Lou?
Lou, I only played with, I think, 1 year on the back end because my first few years there was Matt Falvo, who had all the OUA and CIS kicking records before Lewis broke them. U Ottawa has a string of amazing kickers now. But, Lou's always been the way he is now. He's a quiet guy. I wouldn't say he's outgoing, but he just puts his head down and works hard. You don't hear a lot from him because he's working. He just does what he needs to do and always gets the job done.
Yeah. What about E.T.?
E.T.'s always been an absolute freak. It's hilarious. He's always been going up against the stigma of his size, playing as an interior defensive lineman and being considerably undersized for that position. But he is pound for pound probably the strongest person I've met in my entire life. Like, it really doesn't matter if you put on his university highlight tape and he's lining up against the centers or guards. It's like pretty much every single play he's lifting one of them up and putting them right on their back. It's absolutely crazy. And E.T. also, when he was at the University of Ottawa, most outstanding defensive lineman or most outstanding lineman in all of Canada, and he definitely deserved it as well. He's always been a force from minor football all the way to university.
He must have been a beast because I've seen photos of him like back when he played at U Ottawa, and he looks the exact same.
Oh yeah.
So I'm like, if that E.T. going against guys playing in CIS must have been crazy.
Yeah, right? No, exactly. Anybody lining up against E.T. would have had to bring their hard hat for sure because it was going to be a long day. He was borderline unblockable. Like I said, it wasn't even the pass rush moves that came secondary. His first move just literally to put them flat on their back. It's absolutely insane how low he plays and how strong he is. It was pretty impressive to watch.
Mm-hmm. And then talk to me about the Panda game, because you played, it was the first Panda game back, right, that you guys played?
Yeah, exactly. So I played in the first modern Panda game when it was held at the University of Ottawa on Lee's campus, their field there. And it was fun. It was a good start to what it is now. We won, so it was a good game. And I like to remind the Carlton guys on the team that I had about 200 yards rushing in about three quarters. So I also scored the first touchdown in the modern Panda game as well. So I take every opportunity to remind them of that. And now we get to have fun little wagers every year. And hopefully Ottawa keeps coming on top so I don't have to do anything that you've seen Nate or Justin have to do the past 2 years. So yeah, let's keep that going too. Ottawa U.
I was going to say, it's still a big deal for you guys, even as alumni.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've just, it's always interesting to see how hard the guys from the States rep their alumni. And it's always awesome when you see the U Sports guys rep it hard, especially come Panda time.
Yeah.
So like, can you talk to me about the environment of a Panda game? Because you go there as an alumni on the sidelines. Can you talk about the environment just being there and watching those guys play? Almost building off of the success that you had and you're going in that first Panda game, how far it's come, just the atmosphere there now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think kind of what created a lot of animosity that you see now between the two schools as well is the backstory behind it is that JP Asselin, who's a phenomenal coach and great guy, was our head coach for 2 years in 2010 and 2011, and then left the University of Ottawa to take the offensive coordinator job at Carleton a year before they started up. So that rubbed a lot of us at the time at U Ottawa the wrong way. And that's what kind of started. I remember the first Panda game, a bunch of guys and alumni had t-shirts made, and on the back it said loyalty is priceless, because he took a bunch of our offensive coaching staff with him to Carleton. So it was kind of like us against our old coaches at that time. And a lot of the players were still second or third year players at that time when we played in the first Panda game. So they kind of carried that on. And I mean, now, especially having Coach B back at the University of Ottawa, he was a U Ottawa alumni as well back when the Panda game was happening. So, I mean, the tradition continued, and the teams genuinely don't really like each other. And it's kind of cool. You know, it has a lot of repercussions in terms of recruiting here in Ottawa. There's a lot of good football here in Ottawa. And you know, if the school is U Ottawa or Carleton are bringing some of the top recruits out to that game, seeing your own home fans rush the field after the game, that goes a long way. Bringing recruits in order to see your team play in front of 25,000 university students, that goes a long way as well. So there's definitely some repercussions and reasons why you want to win the game. And I'm glad that it's turned into what it is right now. You have the U Ottawa side and the Carleton side, north and south, depending on who's the home team. And I mean, we've had some absolutely amazing Panda games so far. You've got like the Nate Bahar catch at the end of the game, which I hate having to bring up. because he likes to remind me of that. And then also exciting, the last two Panda games, U Ottawa's kind of run away with it, which is amazing for that program as well. Had a couple games going to overtime as well. So, I mean, it's exciting, and there are definitely some repercussions and some needs to win that game for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk to you about going pro. So you went undrafted, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, well, this is fourth year university, and what happened was at the CFL combine, I fractured and dislocated my right foot, basically. So I needed surgery. I have wires and pins in there now, but I was in no way, shape, or form ready for training camp. And that's what ended up happening, basically. The teams were calling me up before and, hey, are you going to be ready to play this year? No, not even close. I probably didn't even start running until about mid-August that year before going into my fifth senior year at the University of Ottawa. But I was lucky enough that after going undrafted in the draft, which I expected but was still difficult, mm-hmm. because two of my other teammates at the time did get drafted, Simon Lemarquin and Taylor Servet, did get drafted. So I was at the draft party with them and happy for them, but it was tough to go through that experience and not get drafted myself, even though there was a valid reason and I knew going into it that I wasn't going to because of my foot. But the good news was that right after the draft, my agent called me up and he's like, hey, a bunch of teams want to put you on the negotiation list. So it kind of worked out into a situation where I almost got to choose the team that I'd sign with. So, I mean, it kind of worked out, I don't want to say for the better, but it worked out in a weird way that put me to where I am now, really.
Yeah, and so you ended up in Toronto for your first couple of seasons.
Yeah, ended up in Toronto. My dad has family there, and he grew up an Argonauts fan. So I guess inherently that's what I grew up as, despite being in Ottawa for the Renegades era. And I used to come out and watch the Renegades. It was something cool. My dad still has family in Toronto, so I was close to family that way as well. And I mean, I got to play with guys like Ricky Ray, Andre Dury, Chad Owens. So I mean, who better to learn from than those guys?
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, I'm always curious about guys' first training camp experience when they enter the CFL, because it must just be completely different from an Ottawa GG's training camp.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. You realize that, for one, to a certain extent in university, there's a certain extent of babying guys and bringing guys along. And in university, you realize very quickly that, I mean, you're playing with guys that are in their mid-30s, 40 years old, even grown men. The coaching staff is not going to baby anyone. Everyone is grown men. And I mean, it's you really got to take the time to learn the playbook. And that was the biggest adjustment for me was just going from a university playbook to the professional playbook. And it's really just terminology. It's like learning another language is essentially what it is. You can only run so many route combinations. You can only run so many runs out of the backfield. But the terminology, and as quickly as you can learn that, if you're thinking out there on the field, then you can't be fast. I mean, if you look at a practice, you can tell the guys that their heads are spinning a little bit, and you can tell the guys that know their stuff and they can just play football and relax. So, I mean, it's really just getting over that hump and learning the playbook as fast as I could, and also just trying to make an impact on special teams right away as well, because I knew that was probably my only chance of making the team was a special teams dressing spot. Because when I came into the CFL, it was kind of the first thing that I was told was that, well, I don't know whether you're going to be a fullback or a running back and this and that, so we don't really know where you fit in on offense. So right away, that's like a cue. If I want to play, I got to make an impact on special teams. So that's kind of where I focused in on the first year.
Mm-hmm. So you said, who know better people to learn from than Ricky Ray, Chad Owens? What are some lessons that those guys taught you from your time when you were in Toronto?
I mean, Chad Owens and Andre Dury in Toronto are two of the most explosive athletes I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, Chad has route running down to an absolute science. I learned a ton from him in a short period of time, in 2 years. Just in terms of footwork, how to be precise. And from Dury, I basically learned that the details really matter. I mean, he studied everything. He pretty much could play any position on the offense. He did a lot out of the backfield. He did a lot out of the slot. He could be moved anywhere. And that type of versatility is something that I tried to model my game after. And then Ricky Ray, I mean, I'm not even going to talk about his arm or throwing or anything like that. He's just always calm. He's an ex-play guy, and definitely always tried to help the younger guys and bring them along. His calmness kind of taught me that, especially on offense in general, you don't always have to be that raw guy. It's about what's important and sorting out the details and being able to move from one play to the next and never getting too high or too low.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about special teams as well. As you mentioned there, how it was basically your way into the CFL was through special teams. Do you think that's something a lot of guys don't realize right off the bat when they come in, that they might have been a star playing U sports, but now coming to the CFL, they're kind of back to the bottom of the totem pole and they have to start somewhere else and work their way to the position they played during college?
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of guys have to adjust to. I mean, the only time I ever played on special teams in university was my first year, when I was splitting time in the backfield and I was playing a little bit on punt team. And then on the return teams, I was the returner. So, I mean, now being in the CFL and being asked to run down there on kickoff and block on kickoff return, and same thing on punt and punt return, it was completely new and completely different. And that's the reality for a lot of players. A lot of players, you have to take into account that it's going to take you 1 or 2 years to develop into the offensive or defensive player that the coaching staff had in mind. And if you want to make the team right now this year, it's going to have to be on special teams. And a lot of players don't understand that, and I think could really benefit from putting more of an emphasis on their special teams play as opposed to only worrying about offense and defense and letting the special teams suffer. For sure, it's the fastest way onto the field and a big transition, so learning how to take care of yourself in that phase of the game is important for young players, for sure.
And speaking of adjustments, is there any guys from the States that you've played with that had a tough time adjusting to the Canadian rules, or any funny stories of guys that just didn't understand some rules coming up to the CFL?
I don't know about guys that didn't understand it. Most guys picked it up pretty quickly. I mean, I always give the example of Devontae this year, asking about just things on the sidelines, about why are we taking the ball on the 35 as opposed to returning a kickoff after a field goal or something like that. And it's because returning the kickoff won't, like, we don't have enough time before half to return the kickoff, so let's take it to the 35 right now and get the drive started. It's nothing you did. Don't worry, relax. Like, trust me. So, I mean, little things like that. Seeing the American receivers with a waggle the first time is always a little funny, too. You always get one or two receivers in training camp trying to, like, start statically but 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and it's... So that's fun, but most guys pick it up real quick. And I mean, the dimensions of the field are basically a huge difference, and players have to be able to cover such huge area. So that's another big difference that people always say, the field's huge. But other than that, I mean, football's football, and as much as it's a different game, the rules aren't that different. That most guys pick it up pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. And then when did you decide to come home? When did you come back to Ottawa? How did that opportunity arise, and when did you come to the decision that I want to play in Ottawa?
My rookie contract was up at the end of 2015, and Ottawa was obviously just coming off of a Grey Cup contention, and I was evaluating the situation on my role on offense in Toronto, my role on special teams in Toronto, and trying to just best prepare myself for how I wanted my career to go over the next few years. My girlfriend at the time, now wife, stayed in Ottawa while I was playing in Toronto, so that was a little difficult as well. And obviously having my friends, family, support group here in Ottawa was huge. I mean, I wanted to come to Ottawa to play for the franchise that had just gone to the Grey Cup. I wanted to come to Ottawa to take the next step in my career, both on offense and on special teams. And I wanted to come to Ottawa because of everything that the franchise has built here. I mean, the stadium's absolutely beautiful. All that building of Lansdowne Park kind of happened while I was gone. So, like, I came back, and even playing in Ottawa in 2015, playing away games here. And that year, actually, in Toronto, we had a home game here in Ottawa in 2015 because we didn't have access to our field and the Rogers Center. Yeah, we played two or three away games, two or three home games. One of them was in Ottawa and one of them was in Hamilton, but both of them were technically considered home games that year. And just even playing here, like I said, as an away game, the support that I had coming home was like, there was nowhere else I could have imagined playing. It's so much fun. And the tradition of the fans coming onto the field after the game is perfect too, because every single game when I'm on the field, someone that I haven't seen in 15 years will come up to me and say, "Hey, what's up? Remember me?" And it's the coolest thing ever. So I absolutely love it here. And I mean, obviously in 2016, going to the Grey Cup, it was the right decision. And now having played in two Grey Cups since I made the transition here to Ottawa, it's been nothing but an amazing experience. The memories from the coaching staff that's been here, the memories from some of the players, and obviously just being able to be involved in the Ottawa community year round now, as opposed to just when I was back home from playing in Toronto, is a complete game changer as well. I love being able to stay up to date in all everything that's going on in Ottawa year round, and being able to help out some of the minor football and high school teams that I'm able to all year now, not just for the 6 months that I'm home in the winter.
Mm-hmm. And then when you first came back, though, you had to wait because you were battling an injury when you first signed in Ottawa, right?
Well, the injury happened in my training camp 2016. Yeah, exactly. I guess, for lack of a better word, cracked part of my femur in training camp. So I had surgery and missed the first, I want to say 7 or 8 games in 2016. And then, yeah, so I had to wait a little bit. I made my debut halfway through the season, unfortunately, but, that's football. So,
yeah. But when you made your debut, you got to carry the flag. So yeah. Can you talk to me about like how cool that was to be not only playing in Ottawa, being on the home side, carrying the flag out to a packed crowd TD Place? Can you talk about that moment?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have no idea who made that decision, whether it was Rick, Marcel, or RJ or whatever. But I mean, that's the type of thing that I'm talking about when I mean that the organization is top class. I mean, it was something that I really, really appreciated. That experience is something that I'll treasure forever. I mean, I've got pictures to remember it, but running out of the tunnel with the flag that first game, it was huge, and I think it kind of set the tempo for everything that I want to do for the franchise.
Mm-hmm. And when you're running out, you look into the crowd every time, right? Because your family sits in the same spot.
Yeah, I'm looking at my family every time. Exactly. Yeah, so I put my family basically right on the north side. So as I run out the tunnel, I'm pretty much running directly at them and looking directly at them as well. So it's kind of cool, kind of special. I know where everyone is. I've got a cheering section of about 12 people that all sit together every game. In terms of my family and my wife's family. So it's really cool that I get to run out of the tunnel directly towards them. So that's a special experience for sure.
Mm-hmm. And how important was your family throughout the journey of becoming a professional football player? I think I heard you say somewhere that they used to travel to all of your games, both home and away, growing up and even into when you were with the Gigi's, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my family has been absolutely amazing. My mom and my dad, like you said, in minor football, I mean, my dad couldn't get close enough, so he worked the sticks. He was part of the stick crew in minor football growing up, so he had a front row seat. And yeah, my family traveled pretty much everywhere, whether it was a home game or away game, both of my sisters included. My parents have actually been to every single CFL stadium now as well, trying to follow me around at the games, except for Calgary. So that's their next plan. But other than that, they've been to seen me play in every single CFL stadium across the league, which is something that's really special. And I think that they're excited that they're able to say that as well. But yeah, no, the support was absolutely amazing. When I broke the news to them that I was signing with Ottawa in free agency in early 2016. Actually, they were on a trip in Costa Rica. So we were FaceTiming and they were with friends and they were so happy. I'm sure I had a pretty good night after that. But yeah, no, they've been my rocks from day one. They've been nothing but supportive for sure.
That's awesome. I want to talk about your dad a little bit more, because not only did he serve in the Navy for about 20 years, you said, I think I talked to you last year, and after the Navy, he became a volunteer firefighter, and he also runs marathons.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some stuff your dad's taught you just through the years?
Yeah, I mean, my dad just doesn't stop. His work ethic is absolutely crazy. I mean, I saw both sides of him being in the Navy. Obviously, being away from home takes a toll on you as a man, but I mean, my mom is one of the strongest women I know. My older sister really helped take care of the family as well. But every time my dad was home, he made more than an effort to make me and my sisters feel loved. And like I said, when it came to sports, my dad was either always coaching or my biggest cheerleader, my biggest fan. He liked a tough love approach. He never missed an opportunity to tell me, in hockey specifically, because he always coached when I played hockey, if I wasn't moving my feet or if I was just standing still in the offensive or defensive zone or something like that. And I remember, it's funny, I tell a story. I think I was probably, so when I just started playing football, 9 years old, and my dad wasn't coaching or anything like that. He was just watching a practice. And we were just running offensive plays, and he kind of middle of practice walked right out onto the field and kind of grabbed me by my face mask and said, "If you don't start running, I'm going to take you home." And I was like 9 years old in the middle of football practice at the time. And it's funny that I still remember that. Obviously, it stuck with me. And that's just the type of effort that he demands. It's not like he was asking for something I couldn't do. All he was asking is saying, if you're going to be here, put everything you have into it. And I think that's something that stuck around with me through all these years, and where I get my work ethic from him. I try and model my life off of some of the things that he taught me. You know, if I ever come into question about what the next thing to do is, I'll give him a call, or if he's not available, just think what would he say or what would he do. So he's definitely someone that I looked up to. And yeah, I mean, like you said, and like I've said already, after he got out of the Navy, he needed something else to fill his time. So he became a volunteer firefighter and was helping people in the community that way, for a few years. He was doing the firefighting challenges as well the entire time he was a firefighter. And then he got into running and started training for half marathons and then full marathons. So he's run a few full marathons. And he still plays men's league hockey now. So it's fun. It's absolutely fun. And the only thing that I get to compete with him now is golf. And I still can't beat him at that either, although I'm getting closer. But he's definitely someone that inspired my athletic career for sure.
Yeah. Post-playing career, are we going to see you run some marathons?
No, I'm not. I didn't get that gene from him. I live like 6, 7, 8 yards at a time. Yeah.
And I want to talk about your mom as well. So, because like you said, your dad was away a lot. So it was just your mom at home. So can you talk about kind of just what it was like, some lessons your mom taught you growing up as well?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, even with my dad being gone, my mom always worked as a dental hygienist, no matter where we lived. So, I mean, she was working full-time throughout the day, taking care of 3 kids by herself at night when my dad was gone. It's like I said, it's hard on the person being away, but it's also hard being the one at home taking care of everything. When I was in Halifax, she always tells a story about when my dad was gone or out at sea, she'd be the only mom in the change room kind of tying my skates because I was too young to tie them myself. And she always said, yeah, thank God that your dad taught you how to get dressed in all your hockey gear, because she never knew how to do that. She was just the skate tire. But, she was definitely the rock of the family. And I guarantee you, me and my sisters gave her a hard time a lot of the time. But, she always provided and always was the kind, loving, nurturer of a mother that we could ask for. And she taught me probably just as many life lessons as my dad did. And if you ask anyone, they'd probably tell you that my personality is a lot closer to my mom's. I'm a lot more laid back. I'd say my older sister is a little bit more like my dad, and then my younger sister is the free spirit of the family, which is awesome to have too. So I definitely have a bond with my mom, and I definitely say, and I'm sure everyone that knows me would tell you, that I'm a mama's boy as well. So she definitely rubbed off on me on her own way as well.
Awesome. And I want to talk about the Grey Cup as well. What was that whole, talking about that whole experience, like even just that game, you guys were up and then Calgary came back and then it was dramatic in overtime. Can you just bring me back to that moment when the game was over and you won and everyone rushed the sidelines? Where were you? Who was around you? Where did you run to? Like, can you talk to me about that? If you even remember, maybe you blacked out.
There were helmets flying everywhere. I can't even tell you. I think it was probably myself, Keenan, Jake Hardy, and it was just, I couldn't even watch that last play. It was crazy when they threw the last incompletion and we rushed the field. It was just, from that moment on, pretty much all a blur. It's just celebrating with the team. Everything that we've accomplished that year was absolutely amazing. And when something... when you work so hard for so long with one group of people, it's an amazing accomplishment to be able to celebrate like that. And, I'm thankful for every single person in that change room and every single coach that year, because the experience is something that I'll remember forever. To be honest, it's like that field stuff was, I have no idea what happened. We were so excited. I remember eventually meeting up with my family and then bringing the party to the change room. And that's pretty much, I think, where I start to remember again. A whole lot of champagne, whole lot of beer, couple cigars, Lots of pictures with the cup. Yeah, it was, yeah, well deserved. But that's something that I'll definitely remember for sure.
Yeah. And what about just the feeling of bringing the Grey Cup back to Ottawa? The first pro championship, I think it was like in over 40 years at that time. What did that mean to you as someone that grew up in Ottawa?
Yeah, I mean, the city was absolutely pumped. I'll say that. I mean, the welcome that we got when the plane touched down, everybody that came out for the parade, I mean, the city was on a high for probably about 2 weeks, I'd say, where it felt like people wanted us to go out and celebrate with them every single night for like 2 weeks. It was actually kind of exhausting, but fun. But it was, yeah, I mean, the city definitely deserved it. I said all along, and if you look back at interviews from before I was even in the CFL, I talked about how big of a market football has here in Ottawa, and that unfortunately it was just never done properly. Every other CFL attempt that was here in Ottawa, I knew, because obviously I grew up through the NCAFA system. I went through the high school football system here in Ottawa. I went to Renegades games. And I mean, you could tell that the city wanted a good product and the city deserved a good product. The support was there. It was never the fan base. It was never that the city wasn't behind us. And, you know, so to be able to bring that back to a community that gave me so much and so many opportunities was absolutely amazing. And the support that we received from it and the support that we still get today is absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the reverse side and the adversity. So you said you've been to two Grey Cups. You lost the second one. And I want to talk about the last season, 3-15. How hard is that for you as a player to have experienced both the highest of highs and the lowest of lows as a professional football player?
Yeah, I mean, losing the Grey Cup for sure was heartbreaking. I mean, when you get that close and lose, I feel bad for people that worked so hard for so long. And I mean, it's still a great accomplishment, but you can't see that at the time. And that's kind of what's unfortunate about that. And then to go from that to the season that we had last year was tough. Everybody around the organization knows that it was tough. I don't think anybody involved thinks that that's what the Red Blacks are about. And there was 100 different reasons why and a bunch of excuses I can give you. And I'm not going to get into all the particulars, and I'm not going to play the blame game. I think people kind of looked at themselves in the mirror after the season, and that's why a lot of changes took place. And it was something that hopefully, I know me personally, I grew through it, and it taught me a lot in terms of dealing with adversity and how I view myself and how I want to lead in the future. And also what differences between last season and winning seasons and what it takes to be a champion compared to what we were missing last year. So, you know, I think if the people that are here and made it through from last year use it as a learning experience, we can come out better on the end. And I mean, all the offseason changes, obviously, with the new coaching staff, some of the players that we've brought in. I mean, the energy that's in the building right now in terms of the front office and the coaching staff is absolutely unbelievable. It only takes a 2-minute conversation with Coach LaPolice to gauge his energy and how excited he is for this project and to coach this season. And that's infectious. It's infectious. I can't wait for the season to begin. I want to bring on the new, embrace the change, and let's get back to Red Blacks football.
Mm-hmm. What does it take to become a champion?
It takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of discipline. It also takes 12 guys in all three phases of the ball to do it. It takes a good coaching staff, and it takes players basically they have to know what they're doing. They have to operate at a high efficiency, the coaches as well. And it takes players playing for each other. That's the other thing, is that it's not 12 individuals. It's 12 people playing for one goal on all three phases of the game. And that's something that didn't happen last year. You know, we'd have one phase play well, or two phases play well, and we got to be able to put it all together. And as a leadership group, that's something that I myself take personally, and some of the other leaders I know discussed it as well. But like I said, moving forward, we just want to take what we learned from last year and apply it to this year and get back in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. And you're a leader in the locker room, but as we talked about earlier, you're also a leader in the community. And I wanted to ask you about a community initiative you did last year, and you coached the first ever girls tackle football game in Ottawa, right?
Yeah.
Can you kind of talk to me about, like, how did that experience all come to be and what that was like being there for the first ever girls tackle football
game? For sure. Well, first of all, I want to say that JP and myself were there coaching, but the coaches at St. Mark's High School, their football coaches did 98% of the work and basically set it up for about 6 weeks before the event even happened. So all the credit goes to them. I don't want to take any of their credit. I helped out on the day and got the girls excited and was there just for logistics and to have fun with them on the actual game day. But like I said, they put all the St. Mark's High School, put all the legwork in. The girls at the high school are the ones that supported the initiative. They were the ones that were excited. They were the ones that were playing. But you know, I think it was a huge step forward in female sports in general, not only females playing football, but female sports in general. And you know, the quality of the play, I think, really opened up some eyes. And that's what I'm most excited for, was to basically show, hey, women can play this game at a high level. You know, it shouldn't just because women can play men's football, and there might be one or two that make a high school roster, which is absolutely awesome, but that shouldn't be the only route that they have to. I mean, football has taught me so many life skills and so much beyond any type of sporting situation, that, I mean, I want girls to be able to have that opportunity and not just playing flag football or touch football or on a men's team, which is a completely different experience. I want them to be able to experience it with their own friends, build the sense of community that a football team is with other girls in the high school or other girls in the community. So I think that was a huge step forward, and the quality of play, I think, really opened up some eyes, which is the other amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw you tweet recently, there's multiple teams this year now, right?
Yeah. So I can't confirm 100% because I don't have 100% confirmation from the schools yet, but I've been told that there's probably going to be about 4 schools in Ontario this year that all field women's football teams, very similar to what St. Mark's did last year. 2 of them are based here out of Ottawa, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm going to try to do as much as I can with both of the schools here in Ottawa. But the schools that are elsewhere in Ontario are willing to travel and commute to play against the high schools here as well. So we can actually get some high schools versus other high schools and legit games, as opposed to having an inter squad game, which we had between St. Mark's last year. So that's absolutely amazing. And I was so pumped to hear that. That's why I kind of tweeted out probably before I should have. And I've got a couple questions that I had to steer clear of from some newspapers here and backtrack. But I'm excited for the opportunities that girls are going to have. The Cumberland Panthers also have in NCAFA this spring, they're launching a girls tackle football program as well for 3 or 4 different ages, I believe. So I'll be involved with that. The training starts in March, so I'll be involved as a guest coach in that program as well. So, I mean, the crazy thing is that all of these, the registrations so far are exceeding expectations, which is awesome. And that's basically what I'm trying to get out in terms of the word, is that the women want this, and they need the same coaching that their male counterparts get, and they deserve it, because the sport has so much to offer people as individuals, regardless of gender. It's such a community, and to get girls playing this sport now is absolutely amazing, and I'm pumped for what it could develop into.
Yeah, no, that's awesome for sure. It's going to be exciting to see how it kind of evolves over time. If this is only really the first year with multiple teams, it's going to be interesting to see where it is in 3, 5, 10 years down the line. That's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's smart the way that the teams are doing it, playing it in the spring as well. A lot of high schools, logistically, it's a equipment issue, right? Being able to field, say, two men's teams in the fall and then also two women's teams, they just don't have the money for the equipment. They don't have the field time that they need. So to be able to do it in the spring is a smart way to basically be able to do the men's football in the fall and then the women's football in the spring, and both can have their own independent seasons. And that way the coaches can put the same amount of effort into both teams. So it's smart the way that they're doing it. They're doing it right. The coaches care, and the girls are loving it. So far, all good.
That's awesome. Yeah. What is your advice to young football players, guys or girls? Like, what is your number one advice when it comes to playing the game of football?
When it comes to playing the game of football, play the game right. Play the game right. You know, there's a lot of showmanship out there, I'll say, in football right now. And unfortunately, that's what gets televised and publicized, where 90% of what goes into that happens off camera or is undetected. Especially when you talk about guys that make their living playing special teams, guys that play on the O-line, guys that play on the D-line, guys that are blocking downfield. I mean, anytime it's a big catch or a big run, the running back gets featured or the wide receiver gets featured, where 11 other players did something on the play to make it happen. And that's basically what I'd say is it teaches selflessness more than any other sport or any other activity on the planet. And that's the focus that young people need to buy into, is that you are doing something for the better good of the team. And there's absolutely no problem when you're 11 years old and you get put on the O-line as opposed to being put at a running back that gets to score all the touchdowns. You are just as important as the running back or the receiver or the star quarterback, and you're just as likely to make it to the professional football level doing that as well. So that's something that I'd say, is that football is meant to be played with a certain level of selflessness. From that point, basically always make sure that you're having fun when you're playing it as well.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about pregame meals, but I want to talk about one specific pregame meal. So I heard you talk about on Friday night games, you'll do pizza, but make it healthy.
Yeah.
So what does a healthy pizza look like? Like, how do you make it healthy?
Okay. So, well, the base, so for the crust, I use naan bread, but regular naan bread isn't healthy enough. So I use the PC Blue Menu. Okay. Because it's lower fat content, higher fiber. So I use the PC Blue Menu, naan bread, and then regular spaghetti sauce, low fat cheese, and then I use cooked chicken breast and red onion. So I make like a barbecue chicken pizza. So that's basically the way that I get to fit it into my diet, is the PC Blue Menu naan bread, the low fat cheese, chicken as opposed to pepperoni or bacon or something like that. And that's how I fit in. And I still, even in the off season, Friday night's pretty much pizza night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. I was curious about that too, because I know you're very specific about your diet and your workout routine. So when did that start? I feel like, when did you try taking that super seriously? Because you also, you work as a personal trainer in the off season as well. So like, when did the gym really become an important part of your life?
Yeah, I mean, the gym has always been an important part of my life. I started working out probably when I was 16 years old and training for track in the winter. I knew right away, like taking exercise science in grade 12 at high school, that's what I loved. And that's why I wanted to get into a human kinetics or kinesiology program. Like I said, unfortunately for me, I didn't have the marks coming out of high school, but I was able to transfer over into it second year. And then I fell in love with everything. Obviously, we had diet and nutrition classes in university. We had exercise science. We had physiology, biology, anatomy. I became a certified strength and conditioning specialist after my first season with the Argos in 2014. And from that point, basically did strength training for high school football players in Ottawa, as well as I've worked at the University of Ottawa as well with their varsity football team and women's rugby team, doing the strength and conditioning in the off season for them as well. And it's something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I like to stay up to date on research. I still basically have subscriptions to about 5 academic journals just so I get the latest research in the strength and conditioning field. And it's something that myself, I take seriously as well. I mean, now obviously being 29, my body does not handle stress, food the same way that it did when I was 22 years old. So I have to be able to adapt and be smart. And the big focus that people don't realize is as athletes get older, the better you get at recovering, the better you're able to then go out and work out. You're able to work out harder. You're able to train harder. You're able to perform better on the field as well. So I think that that's something that has become more important to me as I age as well, just trying to make sure that there's no dip in performance from 29 versus when I was 23 and how my body feels. My body probably feels better now than it did when I was 23. So it's going well. And I mean, it's aspects like that that make a huge difference. And a big part of that for me now is just making sure that high school football players and university football players get the opportunity to be trained not only by someone who has been in their shoes and gone through it, but to be trained in smart ways so that they're able to compete at their best. And it's hard, you know. Field sports in Canada don't get a lot of love, because the reality of the situation is we get access to fields normally about 4 or 5 months a year in the spring and summer and early fall, and that's about it. And training in the winter, unfortunately, a lot of the time, especially when you're talking about football, it's get into the gym, get as big as you can, bulk up. A lot of the high school guys that I train, they're obsessed with getting bigger. And a lot of the time, to be honest, it's holding those guys back. And I mean, puberty's going to do more for them than I can in the gym or than McDonald's can do on the weekends, right? So I mean, it's being able to train them smart and being able to make them better athletes as the goal. Getting bigger or stronger isn't necessarily going to translate to the field. So basically, I just want to give them the best opportunity for them to succeed in whether they play university football or not. I want them to be able to do it the right way.
And talking about that recovery piece you're talking about there, what do you do to recover properly?
I mean, I stretch a whole bunch more than I did when I was younger. that's the majority of it. I mean, every December, I pretty much don't touch a weight. I don't run at all. It's just nonstop yoga 3, 4, 5 times a week. Even during the season, I have yoga sessions. I'm rolling every single day. I have a stretch routine every single day, and nutrition's a big part of that as well. So I mean, making sure that my body has the adequate nutrients to recover properly and fuel me for optimal performance. But it's the truth. If all you're doing is just beating down your body day after day, and I'm talking like right now, it's training 6-7 times a week, sometimes 2-a-days. If you aren't recovering just as hard as you are training, then all you're doing is beating your body down. People don't realize that it's the rest that your body is able to actually basically repair itself and get you ready for the next training session. So the rest is just as important as the actual training itself and getting your body ready for to endure what it has to go through over the course of a 6-month season, basically. So it's extremely important.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do outside of the football field and outside of the gym? Like, what are some of your interests or hobbies?
I play guitar a lot. Yeah, I play. I've played guitar since I was 11, 12, 13. So I play guitar a lot, sometimes with Brad. Mm-hmm. He's a good guitar player as well. It was kind of fun, actually. A bunch of the guys on the team last year were trying to learn, so we kind of had a communal guitar in the change room, which was fun. We could just pick up and play whenever we wanted. I've got a almost 4-year-old golden retriever at home as well. So he keeps me busy. He's always up for adventures, and I pretty much take him everywhere I go throughout the day, whether it's errands or to the park or something like that. So that's fun. And then I'd say my wife would probably everyone would probably describe me as a homebody. I go to bed early. I'm like a 9:30 in bed every single night. Yeah. And then wake up 6:30 type thing. That's how I feel better. So it's funny. My friends always poke jokes at me being, you go to bed basically when they get home from work and stuff like that. But like I say, you got to do what you got to do to get your body feeling right. So yeah, I describe myself as a homebody. I like being at home. I like the quiet. I like my own time. And
Mm-hmm. And during that time, do you ever reflect on 9-year-old Brendan playing for the Cumberland Panthers to now being a professional football player?
It's crazy. I still see myself as that. I tell my wife that, and she tells me the same thing. That's still how I see myself, in all honesty. That's why I take every opportunity to give back to the Cumberland Panthers that I can. This past week, I was out at a Kanata Knights event with Sherrod, and we got to see some of them. But like I say, it's crazy. I'm still the same person. And if anything, I feel extremely fortunate for the coaching that I was given early on and the opportunities that I was afforded from those coaches. So I honestly think that it's my duty to go ahead and give back anytime I can because of everything that I was given. I just want everybody that's in those organizations to have the same opportunities that I had, regardless of their background or where they came from, which is probably why I'm so passionate about the women's tackle startups, because I think that they deserve the same opportunities as I was given as well. And that's just another avenue that the sport can grow in Ottawa. So, I mean, I love being able to help out in the community around, and there's some really, really good minor and high school football here in Ottawa. So it's a fun community to be part of.
That's awesome, dude. But if you can believe it or not, we're up over an hour already. So I just want to thank you for taking the time to be on Red Blacks Unfiltered. I want to give you the floor. Where can the people find you on social media, Instagram, Twitter, anything? Plug it right now.
Yeah, on social media, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. On Instagram, it's BeagleAnders25. I think it's the same on Twitter. I don't know. You can search my name. I'm probably on Instagram more than Twitter. I use Twitter as my kind of news feed. Twitter's like my newspaper. Yeah.
I want to thank you once again for being on the podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. Make sure you go and follow Brendan on Instagram, and I'll make sure everything's linked in the show notes down below. If you'd like to follow the Red Blacks, you can find us on Instagram at CFL Red Blacks and on Twitter at Red Blacks. Thank you once again for listening to Red Blacks Unfiltered. We'll talk soon.